WDIY presents a special news feature. Voting fraud and vote tampering have been politicized in the media on a national stage in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic with mail-in ballots and absentee voting. This concern became a reality with the recent Pennsylvania primary and the contested race for representative of the 22nd District here in Allentown. We continue this story from the incumbent's perspective. WDIY News is pleased to welcome Peter Schweier, representative for the 22nd District of the State Assembly here in Allentown. We asked Representative Schweier to comment on the June 2nd primary, his opponent's allegations leveled, and his record serving the people of Allentown in his district. Welcome, Representative Schweier. We appreciate you making time for WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
My pleasure.
What were your impressions and perceptions of the June 2nd primary and its results?
You know, the 2020 primary election was unlike any that we've ever had before. It was the first election where we had widespread vote by mail, no fault absentee balloting and vote by mail, which certainly changed the way that everybody was campaigning. On March 16th, I had suspended all of my door-to-door activity and all my direct voter contact activity outside of telephone calls as a direct result of COVID-19 and the worry of the spread of COVID-19. We changed the date of the election midway through from April 28th to June 2nd. And we were still in the middle of in the red zone, according to Governor Wolf, meaning we were still operating under a stay-at-home order. So in spite of the fact that we had a raging pandemic that, you know, prohibited people from being able to gather and get together at restaurants and things like that, in spite of the fact that we had changed the date of the primary, in spite of the fact that safety cautions required us to move polling places, and let me elaborate on that for a second, we had polling places like Good Shepherd Home. There were two polling places at Good Shepherd that were no longer going to be used, and understandably so. You certainly couldn't have an outbreak of COVID-19 in a facility that has so many folks that suffer from serious pre-existing conditions. And in spite of the fact that we were operating under a vote-by-mail for the first time in the history of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we had no major outbreaks or any outbreaks that I know of in Lehigh County of COVID-19, unlike places like Wisconsin that saw a COVID-19 outbreak as a direct result of them having in-person only voting. And more importantly, we had a record turnout of voters. In 2016, you know, presidential elections tend to have significantly higher turnouts than off-year elections, but in 2016, we had about 3,900 people that voted in that primary. And we had about 4,300 that voted in this cycle. So we saw a record turnout in spite of everything else. Ultimately, I think that's a successful day for the Democratic process.
Would you like to comment on your opposition candidate in your primary, Anid Santiago's campaign's accusations of voter fraud and ballot tampering?
Well, I serve on the Ethics Committee in the state legislature. I voted for, that was a bipartisan bill, the vote-by-mail program. I joined in a bipartisan way to extend the primary. I've opposed efforts like voter ID and other sort of initiatives like that that would do real things to reduce the opportunity of people to vote. And lastly, and most importantly, I joined as an associate member of the Legislative Black Caucus. I joined and supported the opposition to Donald Trump in his attempt to overthrow significant portions of our vote-by-mail law in Pennsylvania. So I was on the lawsuit that was just successfully defended. We just defended our vote-by-mail against Donald Trump, who is really, truly trying to stifle the vote in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania as a direct result in his desire to win re-election. I know what real voter suppression looks like. It's a really difficult thing to argue voter suppression when you had such a sizable increase in turnout from one election to another. So just logically, it's a silly argument. The questions about voter tampering that have been alleged by Ms. Santiago have been thoroughly investigated, and there are no charges pending that I'm aware of. Now, there may still be an active investigation. I can't speak to that. I'm not in law enforcement, and I don't serve in the DA's office. But after multiple hearings with the elections board, and I mean, it's at least three or four that I can remember, with multiple statements to the press, with everything else, what has been truly discovered and admitted to has been one judge of election darkening a handful of ballots by her own admission, less than 10, and a machine that was rejecting ballots and just trying to, in her words, and I'm not defending her, but, you know, in her words, just make sure that the votes were counted. That was a district that I received 22 in-person votes. So it's not as if it was a place where, you know, there's any sort of evidence that anything nefarious was happening. Was something incorrect happening? Possibly, but I can't speak to that. That, like I said, is being is going through the system. So, you know, honestly, my gut tells me, and what I genuinely believe, having been in elected office since 2007, been around politics since 2000, my first election that I worked on was 20 years ago. You know, the God's honest truth is I think this is a case of a hotly contested campaign where you had two campaigns that worked extremely hard to try to turn out their voters, tried extremely hard to identify folks that may have been new to the process. And sometimes when you have close elections, tempers get up, and I understand that. And I'm certainly not immune to those frustrations. But at the very end of the day, our system is based on the fact that every vote matters, and every vote counts, and all votes count, and all votes matter, even the ones that didn't go your way. And it was a close election. And I do appreciate the fact that she helped bring new people to the poll. That's a good thing for democracy, like I said. But at some point in time, you have to accept the will of the voters. You know, one of the things that I'm personally extraordinarily worried about coming from this White House is that President Trump has run around and said that he's not sure if he will accept the outcome of the election. And at this point in time, the election's certified. The election's been certified for, you know, a month and a half or so, maybe a little bit longer than that. My opponent has had the legal recourse to file legal complaints. She knows the system. She chose not to. That's her prerogative. I'm not saying she should have sued or shouldn't have sued, but she had the opportunity to do so and simply chose not to do that. And so at the end of the day, candidly, the primary election is over. She has already announced that she is going to run a write-in against me. Again, that is her constitutional and right as a citizen to run a write-in. That's her prerogative to do so, but that tells me that she started the process of moving on from an election that I won, albeit it was a close election.
Representative Schwire, for our listeners who may not know, tell us a little bit about your background and your political path to your current representative seat.
I'm born and raised in the city of Allentown. My father never finished high school. My father was a city worker for 33 years. I lived in 9 places by the time I was 18 years old. My first election I worked on was in 2000. So I've been around politics since then. I first was elected to public office in 2007 when I was elected as a member of Allentown City Council. So I was elected in 7 and reelected in 2011 as a member of City Council. And I was elected to the state legislature in 2014.
Representative Schwire, naysayers may suggest that that political path is that of a career politician, and your primary opponent suggested that you may be out of touch with your majority-minority population in your district. How would you like to respond?
I would argue that I may not look like the face of urban poverty, but living in a house with addiction issues, with poverty issues, with home instability, kind of makes me pretty similar to a lot of the people that I've served through the years. So before anybody else says that I can't serve my constituents or I can't serve my neighbors or the people that have elected me for the better part of 13 years in after this election will be 6 straight elections is really kind of, quite frankly, an insulting question to ask any elected official. Can I serve my constituency? Yes. Can I serve the people who are my neighbors? Yes. My children are children in the Allentown School District, the school district that's about 90% kids of color. Am I able to serve my kids' classmates? Yes, I can. And not only am I able to say that with absolute certainty, as somebody who is raised in the same neighborhoods and on the same blocks as the people that I serve to this day. With all due respect, I've been elected and the people have chosen me to do that because they think I've been representing their interests very well. And so any assertion that somehow, some way, I can't serve my neighbors, people that I've owned my house for 15 years. I'm not new to this city. Unlike some people, including Ms. Santiago, who only registered to vote in the city of Allentown last September, I may actually have deeper relationships in this community in spite of the fact that I am, in fact, Caucasian. When I was elected in 2014, which was the very year that this district moved from Western PA to Eastern PA, this district was 51% Latino and about 14% African American. I've always represented a district that has been majority-minority. Now, those numbers have certainly increased. As younger people become voting age, that number has changed. And more importantly, as new folks move into the community, either through new housing that has been developed in Center City, Allentown, or folks that have moved out and been replaced with younger families. So I've always served a district that was majority-minority. I've also always served the legislative district that I grew up in. And again, as somebody who's born and raised in the city, somebody who my family has lived in the city of Allentown for six generations. In fact, my children are seventh generation Allentonians that I can trace. And so, again, it has been a long and storied history that my family has had with the city of Allentown. Now, my family is not a wealthy family. You know, I do not come from a family of political scions. I am not some lawyer's kid who has had a lot of privilege in my life. My family they were voters, but they were never ward leaders in the political apparatus of the day or anything along those lines. My family was just a family that lived in Allen. And, you know, my grandfather worked for Bell of Pennsylvania as a lineman, you know, and that ego, right? And my dad was a city worker, like I said earlier. And so for somebody who's lived in Allentown his whole life, somebody who's seen many of the same struggles, faced many of the same struggles as a lot of my constituents have, I think I can relate to my community just fine.
Over your time as representative for the 22nd District, what are you most proud of that has affected and influenced and bettered your community that you represent?
Well, thank you for that. So I've done a lot of different things when it comes to public education through the years. I've helped secure tens of millions of dollars for the Allentown School District. But of all of the policies that I've helped enact, sometimes it's through creating a bill and going through the process and getting it put on. But a lot of times in this business, it's building relationships with human beings and just pressing people to look at things from a different way. So the example that I'd like to cite for this, and this is without a doubt the most important thing that I've ever done, and I wonder if it will be the most important thing I will ever do so long as I'm in public life. And that was a deal that I helped spearhead between the Allentown School District, and Bloomsburg University. So a long story, if just for a little context, I serve on the Appropriations Committee in Harrisburg. And the chancellor of the state system schools was testifying in front of us. And after reviewing in great detail their statistics for the past year and actually looking at all of their trends, it became abundantly clear, and they admitted to it, that their number of minority students, particularly Latino students, was incredibly low. It was something like 1 or 2% of the incoming freshmen were Latino. Now, African Americans had a slightly higher uptick, but that's unfair. It's not exactly comparing apples to apples because one of our state system schools is a historic Black university, it's HBCU. And so as a result of that, we saw that the kids that were choosing Kutztown, Bloomsburg, East Stroudsburg, Westchester, and the other 14 PASHE schools, Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education schools, were basically white kids. And that tells me that not only are they doing a terrible job of outreach into our communities of color, it means that they're not coming to Allentown because 90% of the kids in the Allentown School District are, in fact, kids of color. So they're ignoring Allentown. They're ignoring Bethlehem. They're ignoring Reading. They were ignoring Easton. They were ignoring Harrisburg, these cities that are the larger urban core of our Commonwealth, not named Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. So after challenging him and getting in a fight with him, frankly, in public at a hearing, the president of Bloomsburg University, Bashir Hanna, who, by the way, happens to have been a kid that grew up on the east side of Allentown, tracked me down in the halls of the Capitol and said, I want to help. Skip ahead 9 months later or so, we have a historic agreement between Bloomsburg University and the Allentown School District that any kid, any historically disadvantaged student, who graduates from the Allentown School District, who meets minimum threshold at college, automatically has a place at Bloomsburg University. There are now dedicated financial scholarships available for these children. And lastly, there is a family pipeline so that parents who are often did not go to college themselves can understand and feel comfortable about sending their child to school that's about a 90-minute drive from here, give or take, not quite that long. And so we had this historic agreement, and hundreds of kids in the Allentown School District are going to have the opportunity to go to a great school with significantly less debt than they would anywhere else in Bloomsburg. It was so popular that Kutztown came to us and said, we went in on this deal too. We don't want to, now they wanted to make sure that they weren't losing market share in Allentown, but at the same time, that competition has been good for our kids. It has subsequently been replicated by other universities in other cities across Pennsylvania. I believe Millersville in the Reading School District is the one that I can point to. So by starting that conversation, by challenging the head of PASHE, who literally a year earlier worked for Bill Gates, the Gates Foundation, and who runs our 14-system school, by challenging him in public to do better, they stepped up and did so. And so that's not a bill that I got passed. That's not an appropriations that I was able to secure. But it was breaking down a barrier between the Allentown School District and the kids that go here, and the result of which is kids are going to go to college.
I'd like to take a moment to thank Representative Peter Schweier of the 22nd District for making time for WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. We'll continue his story tomorrow at 5:44 during All Things Considered. Please join us then. For WDIY News, James Johnson reporting.